We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, guys? Andrew Claudio here with a quick programming note. This is part two of three of our special Cap or No Cap, Resign or Don't Resign Mitchell Robinson. In part one, John and Jeremy went through some of the analytics and some of the stats of Mitchell Robinson, the type of player that he is. There's a myth about stretch fives that Jeremy found on Reddit that I thought was really cool, and he kind of buried the lead as to the person who put this theory out on Reddit and where that person works now. So I think if you haven't heard it yet, go check it out. In part two, you're going to get some of the other available centers and how Mitch compares to the cream of the crop that's out there at center. So if not Mitch Robinson, then who? That is here in part two. If you are hearing this intro, you may not have listened to part one, so go back and check that out first. But if you have, here is part two, Cap or No Cap, Resign or Don't Resign Mitchell Robinson.
And other teams are thinking that way too. And when you look at the rim frequency for the players that the Knicks had this year, this past season, yep. Mitchell Robinson was first overall. Jericho Sims was second. Nerlens Noel was 32nd and Taj Gibson was 58th. Again, that's out of 111 players. Mm-hmm. And by rim frequency, what am I meaning? Well, it's that the vast majority of their shots are taken squarely at the rim. Right. And then if you go back a year earlier, Mitch was still first overall. He took the most amount of shots of any bigs, probably of any player in the NBA period, at the rim. Nerlens Noel was 19th and Taj was 23rd. So there was more of a rim frequency that past season than there was the most recent one. And like again, here's Mitch, right? 100th percentile in rim frequency every single year of his career.
And I'm convinced that like, the whatever record keeping suggests that he took two or three or five or whatever shot. I think that record keeping is wrong. I think I do not remember him taking a shot outside of 4 feet this season. Maybe I'm sure there was a couple that I'm forgetting, but like, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's like 9 or 10 shots in his career, something like that, that he's taken outside of the paint.
I remember one. One comes to mind.
Yeah.
It's so, like a, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. And like that's Mitch. And then Taj. If you're watching again, on the left side is the effective field goal percentage. On the right side is the rim frequency. We want the rim frequency. This was the year that Taj took fewer shots at the rim than any season before, at least since dating back to 2014-15. And a big reason was because he was taking corner threes and he was hitting
firing
them.
Away. Yeah.
And you like, again, the defense lived with that shot, but the Knicks also saw it as a way to keep going with it. They were fine with him taking it. And, you know, again, it's like, well, then why are the Knicks fine with Taj taking that shot and not Mitch? But it's because Taj also is more of a natural four, but also they knew he could do it. But that's a good question.
No, I think he's been working on it. And yeah. I think the better, and it was something I was thinking about before, I was waiting to bring it up, is like, I wonder if there is an arm of their analytics department that is like, look, the season's over. Let's fuck around and have Taj Gibson take, you know, a half dozen corner threes a game and see, you know, and let's like see what the numbers show on that. And it worked pretty well. Maybe like that's the only pushback I'm really thinking here is like, I do wonder if there is a part of them or a part of the organization that is thinking like, we need someone who at least defenses are going to honor if we put them in the corner, because that is not Mitch. It's not Noel, you know, but
yeah, but I still go back and I look at what they did in terms of,
yeah,
we'll go to the next one of New Orleans. Like this past year, he obviously only played 555 minutes, but this was the 34th percentile for him in rim frequency. Before that, the year before, it was 77th. With OKC, it was 95th, 73rd percentile the year before that. And so the vast majority of his years, he is being used more the rim. And then there were the comments of that he made earlier in the year about practicing corner threes, which we know the Knicks care about. Again, with talking about Taj, yeah, the Knicks see the corner three as a valuable shot, but they may not want their centers to take it frequently, right? Because if we're talking about a center who's in the dunker spot, he doesn't move that far to get to the corner, but they just may not want that shot to be a consistent threat. It might be a break in case of, you know, break glass in case of emergency type shot. It may not just be something they want to bank on. And so that's why it'll be just so interesting to see the direction they go of it.
I think it's, again, the conversation about the center position in general is so difficult because unlike pretty much, I mean, the other four players on the court, I really do think that centers have become something that gets you through 82 games. And then their role in a lot of times changes and in some cases completely goes away in the playoffs, which again, going back to the Mavs for a second, like Dwight Powell, like the Mavs are getting killed in Dwight Powell's minutes this series because he cannot offer enough on offense to, you know, punish any switches or anything. And he's not shooting threes. So he's largely been relegated to the sidelines in favor of like, not only Maxi Kleber, but Dorian Finney-Smith playing center. And that guy's like, you know, probably a three for most of his career. And then on the other side of the coin is DeAndre Ayton. It's like, okay, here's where you earn your money, big guy. Like it's cool if you average whatever it is, 15 points a game for most of the regular season. Again, I don't know what's going to happen in game seven tonight, but I would bet that if DeAndre Ayton doesn't have a big game, the Mavs are going to win this because like he is the matchup punisher. This is a long winded way of saying, I don't think we should rule out the fact that the Knicks may want to diversify their offense at the center position in some way, but that doesn't necessarily mean, and in fact, I would be shocked if it did mean that they wanted to invest big money into it, because I think that for all the reasons that you're talking about, when push comes to shove, this is not the thing that is going to get you to the next level. You know, it's a thing that's going to make it your life easier in regular season games. But guess what? The Knicks need to make their lives easier in regular season games because they didn't make the fucking play-in tournament this year. So they need to improve here.
Yeah. And so just looking at some of the more high frequency bigs, right? You know, it's Gobert, it's Robert Williams, Clint Capella, Plumlee, Trez, Dwight Howard. You know, like a lot of the guys you would expect to be more rim runners, they're listed here. Same thing with the year before. I mean, DeAndre Jordan leading the league. This is all behind Mitchell Robinson and lower, right? That's why he's not listed. But
yeah,
and you know, like you see some of these names here, and it makes total sense why they be listed, but then you also consider, well, how good are they in the grand scheme of things? Is it worth it? How much are they getting paid? Is it worth it? How is it helping them win? I don't know. It differs for a lot of these different players, but I think there's something to be said of the best find ways to not pay a ton for players who can kind of just know their role and stick into it and succeed from there. But as you're saying with the playoffs, yeah, well, it seems silly to talk about the playoffs when we just need to talk about how the Knicks can just build a better floor. It's something to consider as well, though, as you're still building. But I think the next thing to talk about is rim accuracy, right? How well you finish, how you're doing at the rim. This past year, it was Jericho Sims finishing second among 111 players, Mitch ninth, Taj Gibson 82nd, and Nerlens Noel 106th.
Love you, Nerlens.
Yeah. But the year before that, it was Taj 5th, Nerlens 37th, and Mitch 65th. Of course, Mitch got hurt. But yeah, then you could probably apply the same logic to Nerlens Noel.
Yeah.
And again, like the Knicks seem to, when you have, if you go back in the back, look at the last slide, or at least consider it, when you have Jericho and Mitch that high up, like they like players who have good hands. And I know it's funny because like, well, they have Nerlens Noel. Just, I want to take you through Mitch. Of course, this is, you know, historically, other than the year he got hurt, he had great hands at the rim.
No, he's elite, but he's
elite at that. But then, and that just one thing, and then I'll go through it with you. Taj, similarly, he's a player who historically has been able to finish. Nerlens has too, is the really crazy part. His hands are absolute crap. We've seen it. I don't want to gaslight you, but the numbers here, outside of like two abysmal seasons, like the year before he came to the Knicks when he was in OKC, he finished in the 99th percentile in finishing. 85th the year before that. Like when he was with Philly and then Dallas, it was high, mid to high 80s. Like this is a guy who, his hands are stone, but when it actually works, he converts it.
So here's what I have to say about this. And this is actually going to prove my back up, at least my point that I was going to make. I'm not saying that Mitch doesn't have very good hands. He does. He has really good hands. But the fact that he was this year and not last year, but 2 years ago, one of the most successful or one of the most efficient centers around the rim, I think speaks to the very first point that you made, which is that the types of shots that they want him taking in this area are, I mean, and I don't know if you have a slide here for assisted versus unassisted looks, like these are just all lobs or like dump it off and you're open and just, and put it up. These are not a lot of contested looks, which leads me to Nerlens Noel. Again, the fact that we all have eyes and mm-hmm. see Nerlens Noel for what he is, which is not a gifted offensive player. And yet for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 seasons in his career, he's in the 84th percentile or higher for rim finishing for bigs, speaks to the fact that not only the Knicks, but like other teams, like typically like, okay, we're going to utilize you in this way. We're going to be smart about how we utilize you because we know that you're not very gifted at, like, you know, Nerlens Noel is not someone you're going to be like, okay, we'll just toss the ball into you and you could like back this guy down. Interestingly enough, his first year, 2014-15 in Philly, was a pretty low conversion rate, 61%. I would actually argue that that was like maybe the 1 year that he got a little bit more rope. Because it was his first season, you know, it's like he was the number
coming
one
off of injury.
He was coming off of injury. The team stunk. He was at one point the number one prospect in the country. Obviously fell to 6th in the draft. Like, and we kind of saw early on, like, okay, this is not going to be where Nerlens Noel makes his money. Like he's going to be making his money in other areas. In any case, yes, I agree with what you're saying, that the Knicks like certainty at the center position. Can we say that?
I think we could.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Seems they like fair. Knowing what they're going to get.
Right. Yeah. And when you look at some of the other players this past year in terms of high rim accuracy, again, Damian Jones, Jericho Sims, Claxton, Time Lord, Gafford, Whiteside, Kleba, Jared Allen, Mitch, Dwight Powell, Anthony Davis, Giannis. Yeah. Like, you know, the guys who have historically finished well or have good hands. And the year before, I mean, Giannis led the league among bigs. DeAndre Jordan was up there, but we know that again, like DeAndre Jordan might do some good things, but even dating back to last year, he was not a good player. And it's not like having good hands at the rim doesn't mean that you're worth building around or building with. He's, you know, been dumped, you know, more times than Carrie Bradshaw. Or is that, Christ. Well, I hear Sex in the City fan. I figured
that's not accurate.
Wait, well, see, I never watched the show. So there you go. Thank you for correcting me on that.
She's been dumped more. We'll come back to that.
All right. Fair enough. But
wait, hold on. It was a character on the first season of the show called Skipper. He was a boy. Okay. Dumped more times than Skipper. Let's just go with that.
I can live with that. Dumped more times than Skipper. And you know, like still looking at this list, the Knicks seem to like players or they've drafted, or there's an ideal archetype here, and that's something that appeals to New York. And so then I just want to touch on, this is sort of, we're getting to the end of some of these things, right? It's defense and rebounding. So I want to be very upfront and say that you cannot boil defense down to blocks and steals.
Nope.
You can't. It's impossible. With that said, the Knicks, again, at least under Tom Thibodeau, create a player that fully takes blocks and steals, the percent, like block percentage and steal percentage, into account. It's something that matters to them a lot. And so for a player like Mitch, he's a high steal and block stock. We'll just go with stocks from.
I like stocks.
He's a high stock percentage guy. And he also rebounds really well on the offensive glass. And he's done a nice job on the offensive rebounding for free throws as well. With Taj, I know the bar goes away here, but Taj wasn't always like a monster block guy.
No.
But then he gets to New York and that's sort of what he's become. Similar with steals and the steal percentage, like 75th percentile, his first year in New York, that was the best that he'd had since 2014-15, dating back to when Noel started. And he's
high
always
hands,
been,
Jeremy. High yeah, hands.
Exactly. And he's always been pretty solid on the offensive glass. With Nerlens Noel, another guy, just his whole career, big stock percentage guy.
I would argue that he has the best. I have argued him the best. He's the best defensive hands in the sport amongst big men.
Yeah, it's confounding how they can be so good on one end and so bad on the other. But then again, but even still, the rim accuracy tells another story, which is, but the eyes then tell the right story. But then even looking at him, he still overall was a pretty good offensive rebounder. That's something that he has carried with him for a while. And there are 26 bigs this past year with at least a 2 block percentage and 1 steal percentage. I know that that seems confusing, that number, but just bear with me, right? Mitch was 3rd. Noel was 14th. Taj Gibson was 15th. And interestingly, Sims didn't qualify for either of those. He was not good enough on either end. Okay. And it's kind of fascinating to think like, well, because he wasn't, it's a thought process. Like, is that something that he can do? He just hasn't had the ability to show in his first year based on how he was deployed. Or is it just the sample size? Can he do something? I wonder
if that wasn't something along the lines of like, we want you to keep your focus on the very basics, your positioning, mm-hmm. your footwork, switching. Timing. Yeah. It's like if you have to switch, when you switch, how you switch, who you switch on, how long you stay on them, all that kind of stuff. And I think all that stuff was very impressive for Sims, and maybe the part that got left to the side for now, at least for one season, was the other stuff. And we've heard Tibbs talk about that there, he expects to, or he, that we will see more playmaking from Sims as time goes on. That's obviously talking about, you'd think, on the offensive end, but I wonder if he's not talking a little bit defensive playmaking, you know, like splash plays, like blocks and steals. So I would not be surprised to see more from Sims in the near future.
100%. And dating back to even the year before that, there were not 26, but 25 bigs with the at least 2 block percentage and at least 1 for steal percentage. Mitch was 8th. Taj was 12th. Noel was 14th. So the system that the Knicks and Tibbs seem to employ, it helps boost the big men. It gives them something that's more tangible in terms of what they show for their impact. Sure. And I think it's kind of something to keep in mind as they look at other players, because, you know, like we talked about usage rating. Well, these other players, you know, like other than Mitch, these guys have still used, they've been used with a higher usage rate beforehand, and then they've been kind of reined in. Similar with blocks and steals. Like that wasn't a thing that Taj really did at an elite level or a really good level. And then he comes to the Knicks and how they're scheming with him. He's suddenly that player. And so it's going to be really fascinating to me to see if there is another player out there that the Knicks like, if maybe he's not an obvious candidate, but they see potential there and they bring him in and essentially give that player the Taj Gibson treatment of let's turn you around and, you know, really hone in on this and you can be good at this.
Going back to Sims for a second, I wonder if they haven't already shown their hand there. I mean, like, Deuce and Pride, fans were climbing the fucking walls wanting to see this kid. Did not really happen to any significant degree this season. And yet, and we knew all the reporting that came out around the All-Star break and before the All-Star break about the butting of heads between Tibbs and the front office and playing the young players. Who's the guy who got the time immediately coming out of that break to see what he could do? Is Jericho Sims. And I wonder, like, you're just, it came to mind as you, you know, as you're talking about like where the Knicks are looking to fill spots in at this particular position moving forward. You know, it really does jive with everything you're saying. Is like, look, they have a type. They probably think that they can, as you just mentioned with Taj, teach or maybe not teach, but like hone some of, like, if someone has existing skills that are already there, hone some of that stuff to make them better. And the fact that we got so much of Sims, and he was the first one of like the kids to really get in there, and like he, like, no matter hell or high water, he was playing minutes. I think the Knicks showed their hand. I think that they feel like, hey, this is maybe a position that we could kind of, I don't want to say churn, but like, you know, for lack of a better word, at least to a certain extent. You never know what's going to happen. Opportunities may come up, but I thought that that was interesting when they did that.
Yeah. And I don't have this as a slide, but I wanted to think of it as a talking point. But the thing with Sims is it's not, and I know you're not saying this either, it's not like, oh, Sims can replace Mitchell Robinson.
No, it's
not. That's not the conversation right now. It's because also expecting a player in his second year as a center to be a capable starter, it just doesn't really happen, especially not for a guy who's 58th.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the Jared Allens of the world. It's if you're a top three pick, most likely. It takes time, at least
your name's
3 to 4 years. Or James Wiseman. And even, yeah, right.
He played as many minutes a season as we did. Yeah.
And that's where it kind of comes into play, where it's, if you're thinking like, oh, Jericho Sims could be a replacement for Mitch next year. No, he just can't. That's not who he is. You need more time. You need to grow into the role in the NBA. And that's fine, because if the Knicks are operating over the cap, I would hope that they dip into the mid-level exception and extend him. If they go below the cap, I would hope that they could do what they did with Deuce McBride and sign Sims first to squeeze out. So you get, you know, 3 to 4 years of team control for Sims. And then you do everything else if that's what you plan on doing. But that's kind of the mindset for looking at these types of players. And this past season, right? I looked at the steal and the block thing we talked about, the stock percentage, and I sorted it by offensive rebounding. So all of these are the 26, 25 guys for this past year. And if you're watching, you'll see at the top, there are two names, and it's Andre Drummond, right? And it's basically because, do you remember how there was reportedly interest by the Knicks in signing Andre Drummond, even to a multi-year deal? How could you forget it? It was an awful time.
I remember it well. It was a great time to be alive.
Well, this is kind of an example for why. Because even though Andre Drummond is absolute garbage at the rim in terms of finishing, like, he does these types of things. And again, he's not someone you would want to replace Mitchell Robinson with. God knows.
But he
brings an archetype that is similar. He's also too high usage. But then that's the thing. Do you rein that type of player in?
But that's what I'm saying. Andre Drummond isn't garbage at the rim. Andre Drummond takes a lot of crappy shots at the rim, which is what drives his rim percentage down. That's the issue.
And how do you then change Andre Drummond at 29 years old? How do you rewire him? It's hard to do. Like, we're talking about the difference between Andre Drummond and Taj Gibson. And also, here's the other thing. You look at these numbers and you think, oh, high stock numbers. Andre Drummond's a good defender. He's not. He's not a good defender. And like, that's why we were prefacing by saying blocks and steals don't tell the full story with defense, because you can get high numbers and players like Hassan Whiteside can get paid, and then they just don't really contribute what they needed to in a place like Miami, and they bounce around from time to time. So it's just kind of, you have to be a little wary of the numbers you're spitting out, because you want them to tell a closer story to what's really true.
And we should also just say explicitly for anybody who may not have caught it earlier in the year, Mitchell Robinson actually said at some point, it may have been before the season, it may have been during the season, I forget, but like, he knew his block numbers were going to be lower, or basically he was acknowledging the fact that, like, look, I'm not blocking as many shots because for me to be a better defender, it's me not jumping after as many block opportunities, which I think your best defenders in the league will, you know, will do that, right, or not do that, I guess.
So it's Drummond with the top two entries sorted by offensive rating. Sorted by offensive rebound. Mitch, Clint Capella, Robert Williams, Okongwu, Jared Allen, Goga Bitadze, Brandon Clark, Nicholas Claxton, Isaiah Hartenstein, Chris Boucher, Shungun, Noel, Taj, Naz Reid, Damian Jones, Anthony Davis, Joel Embiid, Evan Mobley, Giannis, Kristaps Porzingis, Al Horford, Miles Turner, Jaren Jackson, and Mike Muscala.
So all guys who block a decent amount of shots and steal a decent amount of balls.
Yes.
Got it.
And the year prior, Capella's back at the top. Got Dwight Howard, Moses Brown. There's Drummond again. Robert Williams again. Derek Favors. Drummond again.
Drummond goes to a lot of different teams, doesn't he?
It has since his last days in Detroit. Yeah.
What do you think that means? Anyway.
I don't know. Mitch, Jakob Poeltl, Isaiah Stewart, Okongwu, Taj, Jarrett Vanderbilt, Noel, Nurkic, Kemberch, Nicholas Claxton, Chris Boucher, Joel Embiid, Naz Reid, Anthony Davis, Daniel Tice, PJ Washington, Miles Turner, and Mark Gasol.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So I want to do a little bit of research, right? Because we have the time. We have some time. And I figure might as well look at some of these names that are relevant. And, you know, I'm sure some of them are covered that you would have in mind. And we can always look at that. But I thought of eight names to kind of look up and show the people. These okay. are players who are free agents and not.
Okay.
So the first one I figure we should do, because I know you've talked about him, I know I've talked about him, is Miles Turner.
Miles.
So again, like you've mentioned, if you look at the frequency, or at least we've talked about this, right?
Can I just say for the record, I don't want to trade for Miles Turner. I don't like the idea. It's just something I always revisit because there's been smoke there for a long time. And like, it does make it makes theoretical sense. Your entire segment earlier from this podcast would seem to push against the fact that, like, yes, theoretical sense is one thing, in actuality is a different thing. I don't want to trade for Miles Turner. I just want that out there.
I liked Miles Turner for a bit this past season, came down to earth, realized the fad was a fad and not a trend. I just don't see the appeal of it based on how the Knicks are constructed, because then it also means you're probably keeping Julius Randle and trying to build around exactly. his strengths. Yeah. It's just what it represents. But yeah,
also, big men with foot issues.
Yes.
Not great.
And expensive. And you have to trade for him. It's not like just signing him. But yeah. I know we just looked at this, but the defense and rebounding, he's just such a bad offensive rebounder. And when you kind of like a great shot blocker, absolutely great. But when you consider that and where he's taking his shots and the impact of like the offensive focus and doesn't make sense to me.
He came out and said on the record to The Athletic, I want a bigger role in mm-hmm. the offense. Like, this is a guy who is not happy with his role in Indiana. And I'm going to be very curious to see who gives up what for him coming off this injury this summer. And maybe nobody gives up anything worth worth much for him. Or it's a desperate team, or maybe it'll be the Knicks. We'll see.
Yeah.
But there's just a lot of red flags here.
Right. And for context, like, he was 44th percentile in usage last year. So if he's saying I want to be used more,
yeah,
what does that mean? And how does it correlate with the Knicks? It's the exact opposite of what he wants. The next is Clint Capella. You know, again, like, this is someone who his usage could be scaled back even more. He takes the type of shots that the Knicks want.
Yep.
He makes the type of shots the Knicks want, although his rim accuracy could be better. It's not been great. And you wonder, again, about the fact that he is turning 28 this year. And he also has had injury concerns.
Yeah.
Again, like, if you look at the defense and the rebounding, like, the rebounding he does at such a high level, he is absolutely elite at the rebounding. Is it worth the $22 million or so and the cost of having to trade for him? I don't see it.
So again, this is like, kind of, he's like, I think if Capella in a lot of ways is like kind of the poor man's DeAndre Ayton, in that you will see Atlanta occasionally, I'm not saying the exact same player archetype, Ayton obviously is more than a dive man, but you'll see Atlanta dump the ball down to him and let him take that little like baby hook or whatever, like something to, again, in theory, make the defense be like, oh, we can't switch anything because otherwise Clint Capella is going to be able to take this shot against us. When in reality, that's it. Like, if Atlanta, and when it comes down to it, and Atlanta's, if they ever get in a big playoff series with Clint Capella again, or whoever employs Clint Capella, and they get into a big playoff series, that's going to be a shot that a defense is going, a good defense who like has solid switchable defenders. I'm not talking about defense that, like, you know, I don't know, Steph Curry's going to get switched on to Clint Capella. Like, there are ways to avoid certain switches that you don't want. I'm talking about a good defense that knows what the hell they're doing. Like, they're going to be like, Clint Capella's going to beat us. Clint Capella's going to beat us. You know, yeah. We'll live with that.
The next guy, Mo Bamba. I know you wrote about him recently.
The great tease.
Yeah, that's the thing. He, so much Dude, of it feels...
He's so good from deep. The numbers are really good.
I mean, well, yeah, from non-corner three.
Yeah, that's
year,
the crazy part. 201. It's above the break. Yeah. He's killing it.
Yeah. And that's, again, like, the rim factor. Like, he was great in his rookie year.
Yeah.
That's awesome. But, like, he took 40, he was 40th percentile on the shots he took from there. A lot of his shots are long, mid, corner threes, non-corner, all threes. That's just maybe not something the Knicks want. And then you look at the defense part. Yeah, he's a really good shot blocker. And, you know, he's okay on the offensive glass. But it doesn't feel like, especially from how he's being used, that's something that the Knicks really want. It's so, like, to me, it's just like he's perfect for another team's ideology, but it's pretty fascinating that, and maybe he bet on himself, maybe the Magic didn't want to do it, but if the Magic didn't want to pay him, but then went ahead and paid Wendell Carter Jr. 4 years, $50 million, like, I know that Wendell was playing more of the four and Bamba's more of the five, but it's an interesting tone that set where it was like, we're willing to pay one of you, but not the other.
I am probably more fascinated by the Mo Bamba situation than I should be, because it's fucking Magic. Who cares? But, like, they just, like, again, you're talking, it's two different conversations. It's conversations about, like, how are we going to build our team that's going to trot out, we're going to trot out there for 82 games. And, like, what's going to happen when we get in these high leverage playoff games? The Magic are not going to be in high leverage playoff games anytime soon. When they get there, I'm quite certain that Franz Wagner is going to be playing the four, and, like, who the hell knows who's going to be playing the other positions. And then you throw in the fact that they might get in the top of the draft, and there's guys there who profile as, like, starting fours, but eventually they'll be fives. Like, all of this stuff is interesting to me. I don't know. Maybe you've heard, I don't remember hearing any rumors of the fact that they even talked to Bamba about extending. Are they just, like, not interested? Are they, like, out of the Mo Bamba business? And what is, like, if that's the case, what does that mean for him?
Right. And what does that mean if you're a team like the Knicks that wants to pry him away? I mean, you don't have the cap space, so you can do a sign and trade. He has base year compensation, but as you have mentioned before, the Magic have cap space, so you can still make something
get around
work.
It.
But then at what point are you overpaying for the big tease?
He's an interesting flyer, you know.
But being a restricted free agent, assuming that's what he is, it's like,
but that's why I asked,
right. You're not taking a flyer, so to speak. You're investing in someone.
Yes, unless talk about things the Knicks have done in the past. Bobby Portis, they got what was it, Washington, right at the time?
Yeah.
To what was it? I don't even know if they put the whatever. They rescinded their rights to Bobby Portis, so the Knicks were able to sign him to a 2-year deal.
Well, yeah, with a team option.
Yes, with the team, exactly, with the team option, which allowed him to go to Milwaukee. Good job by you, Bobby. I don't know. It's a name that I think should be at least on our radar. That's all. That's all I want to say.
Yeah, I guess that's where we differ. To me, he doesn't.
Even though he's just in mobile.
That's doesn't,
fine.
I know, but he just doesn't pass the smell test for what the Knicks
you're right. He doesn't pass the smell test for what the Knicks are looking for. And also, when I wrote about him a few weeks ago, which is that, like, when have you ever watched a Magic game and felt like, came away with like, wow, that Mo Bamba, that guy's a player on the come up. We got to get that stock while it's still like, no, he doesn't give you that impression. Yeah. How much of that is the fact that he's in Orlando? I don't know. Anyway, let's move on.
So next, Isaiah Hartenstein.
Here we go.
I'm a big fan of Isaiah Hartenstein.
You're blushing.
A little bit. But here's the thing. As much as I enjoy his rise to prominence, he's another guy where I don't think he is what the Knicks want. Listen, like, he's been more high usage lately, and the reason for that is he's someone who also needs the ball a bit more in his hands than I think the Knicks are willing to let a center have. If you look, he's the assist percentage, the assist
rate,
like, they're really good.
Those are the two numbers that
they pop out at you.
Yeah, because, and again, that is not, the Knicks don't ask their centers to make any plays, but how much, it's another chicken or the egg question. Is that because this regime and this coach inherited Mitchell Robinson, who outside of like a play here and a play there, does not seem to be the most capable decision maker in quick thinking situations? And how much of it is like, look, we don't want you to work on that. We want you to just, dive. Like, Hardenstein's a guy that is going to be a functional part of your offense in more ways than just like being a finisher.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. I mean, this is the thing. He takes a lot of shots at the rim. That's exactly what you would want. He's pretty good at making them. At least last year was really the only sample size we have that's significant, is the other thing to consider too. He is a stock guy. He does well on offense. So do I like him? 100%. Do I think he is a logical Knicks fit? I'm skeptical. I don't think that they would want, I don't think they would use him in the way that he would want to be used.
I think that they should have a free agent meeting with Hartenstein. The free agent pitch meeting should have a picture of the MVP voting figures from the year that Noah finished, whatever it was, third or fourth, and then a picture of Hartenstein next to it, and with like the arrows, like, yeah, being like, this could be you. I will turn you into Joakim Noah circa 2014.
Yeah, right. And I should mention that he is an unrestricted free agent. The most that the Clippers could give him is the non-taxpayer mid-level exception, which is like around $6 million. He could honestly make a little bit more than that.
Someone will pay him more than that.
I think someone could as well. Andre Drummond, we talked about him, but just again, like, super high-used dude, which is not going to fly here, but like, he still takes a lot of shots at the rim. They're not as good shots as you pointed out, but he takes them. And then that's just awful. A lot of blue, a lot of bad percentages and percentiles. And then we saw the defense and rebounding. They're fantastic. But he's like the perfect eye test versus numbers test, where there's a lot of flattering stuff here. It's just not good when you see it.
If they sign DeAndre Drummond this summer, just trade for Russell Westbrook too. Trade RJ Barrett for Russell Westbrook.
And, yeah.
Throw him out quickly and just like, just end it for me. Yes. Please.
Yeah. We do not want Andre Drummond. A few more. Daniel Gafford. I really like
recently extended Daniel Gafford.
Recently extended. Yes. Gafford to me feels like a Walt Perrin 5 in so many ways. Look at this. I mean, he's a lower usage guy. Takes a ton of shots at the rim. A lot of them.
He does.
And he makes them. Makes them a lot.
Yeah.
He's pretty good at blocking. The steals again, like, over all. They're okay. And he's a really good offensive rebounder. Like, you look at a lot of the numbers we're talking about with him and with Mitch, and it just feels similar. Like, they seem like similar types of players. And I think that's just something kind of to keep in mind.
I think if I was Mitchell Robinson's, I don't know who his representation is now.
one of the, not the previous five agents he was with, his sixth one. Yeah. Lost track.
Whoever it is, one of my negotiating points would probably be that Daniel Gafford got paid, average annual salary, excuse me, of $13.3 million. And that was only a year ago. Right. Mm-hmm. And I would argue that Mitch has shown more as an NBA player, especially in the last year, than Daniel Gafford did at the point in time when he got that extension. Interestingly enough, though, so Daniel Gafford was a big time, very good plus minus guy. He was good plus minus guy in Chicago, and then he came over to Washington that first year, and it was like, oh my God, how did the Bulls let this guy get away? Mm-hmm. This season, and again, I don't watch a whole lot of Wizards games, but one of the very worst plus minus guys in the league. I think there's probably some noise with that, because I know that there's some plus minus noise with some other like Washington guys. And like, their starting lineup was just very bad after a certain point in time. So maybe let's not read too much into that, but just wanted to throw that out there.
Well, he's also coming off the bench because Kristaps Porzingis is now ahead of him. They were juggling Thomas Bryant III,
who's unrestricted as well. Talk about guys that don't fit the archetype that you're talking about.
Exactly. But, yeah. So I think it was hard for Gafford to just kind of fit in. It's a younger team. Beal also, I like
Gafford. He's the opposite of Bamba. Every time you watch Daniel, it's like, it reminds me when I watched Rashawn Holmes for like all those. Again, he has his own issues that the Knicks should not bark up that tree for those reasons. But like,
well, there isn't actually an update to that, but we'll talk about him in a moment. Oh,
okay. But he was a guy who like always popped off the screen for me. Same thing with Gafford. Like, I love Gafford's energy. I love all that stuff. Now, does it mean that there aren't subtler things that he's not doing or doing poorly that hurt a team in other ways? You know, I don't watch enough of his games, but yeah.
Right. And the thing with Gafford, he's still on a contract that's under $2 million this year. It's super cheap. And then the extension
kicks in next year,
3 years, $40 million. It kicks in the year after that. But here's the thing with Gafford, right? Because if you're listening to this and you're thinking like, how is it that you're saying that the Knicks shouldn't pay like 10% of the salary cap for Mitchell Robinson, but then they should go ahead and do it for Daniel Gafford? And I think that's a really compelling reason. Like, there's something to be said of maybe Gafford was a viable option for the Knicks, and then the price tag came along and suddenly it does restrict what they want to do. Maybe if they don't feel comfortable paying Mitch, then they also won't feel comfortable with the idea of trading for Gafford. And like, also, the way for the math to work for Gafford, it either need to be one of two things. Number one, well, I guess number one of three. First one, created a traded player exception, you could, you know, just kind of trade him into it as long as it's big enough. Number two, a straight swap for Deuce McBride. Number three, cap space. And then I guess that's, if you create cap space and then do that. I guess that's really it, actually.
Just bring back Mitch. If you're sitting around having a meeting about like, well, you know, we like what Gafford could bring to us. Like, and that's something we haven't really touched on here, and we don't need to have a conversation about it. But like, there is something I think to be said for the notion of like, this is a team that has had less continuity than arguably any team in the NBA for the last 20 years. Again, different chicken or the egg question. Do we have no continuity because the players stink and we always are shuttling them out? Or is the fact that we have no continuity part of the reason why it feels like our players stink and we can never build anything? Like, I don't know where you fall on that spectrum, but I do think there was something to be said for like, look, Mitch is a good young player. Like, if you're just going to replace him with a similarly priced option that's a similar archetype, maybe just keep him.
Right. And I think the one argument for why you would kick Mitch to the curb and trade for Gafford is if the Knicks were in a position where they were hard capped and they were pressed up against the tax apron and there were money concerns, where it's like the Knicks couldn't spend more to keep Mitchell Robinson. So this season, if they had traded for Gafford while he's still on that cheap deal, then it makes sense. And then the next year when they're not hard cap, they can, you know, kind of go above it and do it. But that's like, that's not a situation that they will find themselves in, because the Knicks won't be spending enough money where that's a need or a want. So yes, Gafford to me is a really fascinating player. I think the fact that he signed that contract extension kind of makes a lot of it feel DOA in terms of swapping him in for Mitchell Robinson.
I would agree.
Rashawn Holmes. So the reason there was an update is, fortunately, I mean, it's just an unfortunate case period, but it seems as though the claims of domestic violence were not found to be credible.
Oh, okay.
And that his former partner, Rashawn Holmes was awarded custody of their child. And
oh, wow.
Bottom line, it seems like, fortunately, things are okay for him. Okay. Or getting better. But Holmes is so fascinating too, because, you know, last year he was 27 years old, hit the open market. And I really thought teams were going to spend larger than what he got on the market.
I was shocked. He ended up signing for what he did.
Yeah. And,
which we should say, by the way, was essentially an average annual salary of what? 11 and change or 12 on the dot. Something
I think
like
it was, yeah, like 448, something along those lines. But, Holmes is a good player. That's a thing of why we were both so surprised. And I mean, look at this. Like, he isn't a high usage guy at all. Still takes a bunch of shots at the rim. He's super efficient as well, which I think is important. But he takes these mid-range shots that I think, you know, they work.
It adds
a wrinkle to the offense.
His little jump hook, and you could see it if you're watching on the YouTube, you could see all the bright orange numbers. Like, he hits these things at an astounding rate, and he's been doing it for years. This is not a one or like pretty much his entire career.
Right.
And that, you know, again, it's one wrinkle of an offense. It's like, you're not turning Rashawn Holmes into Joel Embiid, but it's like, it's an extra little thing that, depending on how to use a guy like this, can come and make a difference.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, I mean, even when you like the blocks, he does it. The steals, he's had it in the past. A lot of it might be how Sacramento's using him. He's a decent rebounder in general. So he's such an interesting candidate because, yes, you obviously do have to trade for him, and he's making enough money where you're probably having to send like Nerlens Noel, Kemba Walker, that type of money. But the Kings are in such an odd place because they have a ton of centers realistically. Like, Sabonis plays the five now. He is a five in Sacramento. He's not a four with Miles Turner anymore.
Yep.
And they want someone who's probably a better shooter at the wing to play the four. And so that then restricts what they can do at the five. They have Alex Len under contract. I don't know if he would necessarily be the player that they want there. I think they have Metu, who's had some quality minutes now and then.
Lineups with Metu in big?
I'd have to go back and check. And we can look at that now.
Have to go back and check.
But it's like, it's the sort of thing where, like, there are a lot of different fives that they have. And when
they're going to trade this guy,
that's the thing. They're probably going to trade him.
They're going to trade Holmes.
It makes sense for him to go to a place like Charlotte, perhaps, Dallas, like places that are looking to be economical, but also invest in a better center than what they have. But that's the thing where it's like, if you're the Knicks, what makes more sense to you? Would you rather trade for Rashawn Holmes, or would you rather play the game of paying Mitchell Robinson? And again, like, it goes to that point of, I'm not saying that Mitch is even a better player than Rashawn Holmes. It's just the opportunity cost of it. Is that worth it to you? And I don't know the answer to that question. That's the thing. But my viewpoint is, I think the devil you know feels better than the devil you don't, because of the outgoing factors and all that jazz.
Holmes is a great guy for me, for a team that is the type of team that we were talking about before, where it's like, they want to have an 82 game center that they feel comfortable with for those 82 games, and then can do with what they need to do with him when the playoffs come around. And his salary, it's not like you're burying your $25 million a year player. You're just burying your $10 million. Like, you can work around that. And that's why I think, like you mentioned, Dallas, I think, you know, but then again, they still have Dwight Powell under contract for one more year. I'm curious what the market is going to be. And I feel like Charlotte, I mean, unless they hire Mike D'Antoni and they just figure when push comes to shove, we'll play Miles Bridges at the five, which that'll be fun. Like, are they in the market for someone that's a little a little better than Holmes. I don't know. I have no idea. But he's going to get traded, and I'm very fascinated to see where he gets traded to.
Same. And then the last name is also a member of the Sacramento Kings from last season. It's Damian Jones. It's not a player who a lot of Knicks fans probably know much about. He's drafted by the Warriors, played with the Lakers for a bit, most recently with the Kings. Jones is the perfect, I don't want to say perfect, but he is almost as perfect as you can get in terms of fitting the archetype. All right. Because this year he was higher usage than he probably has been. The issue is, like, in Atlanta, he played 830 minutes. That's a decent chunk, but we don't have a lot of operating minutes with him because of just how he's been used over time. He just hasn't been played a lot, and he's already turning 27 years old. But the fact he's turning 27 also could mean that he's available for cheap because he's never really made much money in this league for a reason.
We should say he's an unrestricted free agent.
Yes.
He's on the open market, which... So he was the... I must be missing something. He was the 30th pick in the draft.
2016 for the Warriors, yes.
Yeah, and he was obviously an older player when he was drafted. He was already 20... whatever. As a rookie, he was 25 years old. Right? Did I miss something?
He's 21. He's 21 when he was drafted.
He was 21. Oh, I'm sorry. So he was with. Oh, that's right. This is his second contract. That's what I'm missing.
Not even. Like, it might be his fourth at this point.
Okay. So he's bounced around for a while.
He has. And he's never really kind of found a home. And the challenge with the end of the season is that so many of the stats feel like crap. Like, you look at how Obi did, and it feels meaningful because the Knicks were playing meaningful teams that were actually trying. But then if you do the extra research and look at what Damian Jones was doing in those last, like, 15 games, you'd think he's a superstar on the rise. Like, he was just purely from a box score. I did not get the chance to, like, actively watch him. I'm just saying purely by the numbers, which, as I mentioned with Drummond, isn't always the best thing to do. But if we're just looking at, like, this type, he finished really strong.
Last 15, you want to go?
Yeah,
go for it. His last, so he had some DMPs still down the stretch, but if we want to go starting with when he started starting games for the Kings, which was the last 9 games. Started every one of those games, played at least 24 minutes a night for all of them. Again, this was a Kings team that was largely out of it. And I'll just go through his stats. 12-6. Oh, he averaged 17 points a game. A little low on the rebounding, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, not nothing. 1.6 blocks, 0.7 steals, shot 72.5% from the field, and actually took a 3 a game and made 4 of those threes, or 44%, I should say.
Yeah.
So yeah, four of nine.
Yeah. I mean, like, again, he's got higher assist percentage and assist to turnover to usage rating. So that's not something the Knicks necessarily want, but it's kind of like, can you make him less of a focal point on the ball? Yeah, 100% you can. When you look at the frequency, like, all he pretty much does, other than this past year, which was taking some long mid-range shots, it took 31 of them this past year. Like, he pretty much stays as a rim runner. And look at that. Like, he did a really great job. He has historically done a great job at finishing at the rim. He's also the type of guy where the block percentages look good, the steal percentages look great. He's just not really a good offensive rebounder. And so that's the one thing where it's like, you're not going to find perfect, right? No matter what. But it's the sort of thing where, is that going to be such an important factor for the Knicks that maybe they wouldn't even consider him? He's attainable because you could do a number of different things, right? Like, if you created cap space and wanted to sign him, you could do it. If you wanted to sign him and you're above the cap with a portion of the mid-level exception, you could do it. And if you needed the room exception because you went under the cap, you could do it. It's the room exception will only be 2 years, but it's still something to consider. He's such a fascinating case for me because, let me pose this question. This was a B-Ball Index tweet, and I want to do a little trivia for you.
Okay.
So there were 4 bigs who had 1,000 minutes or more this season. And they finished in the 70th percentile or better in the following three areas. It was rim shot making, so shots made at the rim, screener mobile defense, and rim protection.
Screener mobile defense?
Yes. So I guess
what is that?
Honestly, I'll be honest. It's not a stat that I'm super familiar with. So I don't want to, but the, I mean, you have to think about getting around screens probably.
Okay. Something guarding screens. Well, got right. it. Okay.
Four big men. Would you like to guess who they were?
Well, sorry. What was the last stat?
Rim protection.
Okay. So good rim protectors. 70th
percentile or better in all three of these areas.
Okay. So good finisher, good rim protector, and guards screen actions. Well, I mean, I could just, So the finishing is tough because like your guys like Bam are going to, you know, they're going to take tougher shots around the rim. So he's not going to be in there. It's basically like a dive man who's good on like screen actions. And what's the minimum minutes?
1,000.
1,000 minutes. That makes it even tougher.
Which is also odd though, because it's clean the glass. I'll give one away. Damian
Jones is obviously one of them. But just tell me who the other three are. I'm not going to guess them.
Cool. Daniel Gafford, Mitchell Robinson, and Jakob Poeltl.
Poeltl's a good defensive player.
He is. He is a good defensive player. But that's like the thought process behind it, where you're then looking at a player who's really good in pick and roll. I believe he screens really well. He's more of a, he was used more as a mobile big than an anchor, but I don't know, man. I was just looking at numbers. There's some really fascinating ones out there. And like when you talk about the archetype, it does make sense. It does.
Good teams will look at a guy like Damian Jones and pick him up off the scrap heap and turn him into something. Because the guy clearly has NBA skill. You know, you don't average 17 points a game over the course of 9 games. I don't care who you're doing it for and what part of the season it is. If you like stink, and he was doing it efficiently and the whole thing.
The one thing I'll add just onto that before we continue the next thing. I'm not even saying Damian Jones is a better player than Mitchell Robinson. And I know you're not either.
It's not about
the bang for your buck.
Yeah.
You're getting Damian Jones and you're sign and trading Mitchell Robinson and you get something in return better than keeping Mitchell Robinson for more money. It's a really tough question to consider. And it's also, you know, like we talk about Jericho Sims. What if there's a world where you play each of them for 24 minutes, something along those lines, right? Like, isn't that something that we as Knicks fans would want to be content about? Like if you're having 24 minutes of that same archetype and in the playoffs, come playoff time, if you're even making the playoffs, which hopefully the Knicks would, then you have a little bit more versatility in it where if you need to play them, you can. You can switch on and off on different guys. You can go small. You can do various different things. It's a way of like paying for that archetype without paying for that archetype.